And now, your go-to source for year-round fantasy hockey advice, DFS and betting coverage. This is NHL Fantasy on Ice, presented by Skip, the official food delivery app of the NHL.
We're not even at the midway point of the season yet, and already the Colorado Avalanche have shipped out both of their goalies from opening night. Talk about desperation, brought to you by our good friends over at Skip. It's time for another episode of NHL Fantasy on Ice, Week 10 Mailbag Edition. Nick Elberga and Jake Hahn with you. What's going on, Jake?
The Colorado Avalanche not waiting for the paint to dry and really mixing up that goaltending situation. We've never seen anything like that. So, of course, this episode brought to you by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip.
Very well said. Lots coming up on today's podcast. Michael Leboff is going to stop by our NHL handicapper to break down the latest in NHL betting. Pete Jensen, as per usual. But yeah, that is the big story for me as we start today's podcast, is the fallout from the Colorado-San Jose trade and what this means for Alexander Georgiev. But let's start with Colorado's crease and how the tandem has changed tenfold from opening night, of course.
I think this is the more interesting angle. Like you said, there's obviously the Georgiev angle to this and where this goes moving forward. I don't think anybody has had a worse contract year in the history of the league than Georgiev has had this year. He totally fumbled this thing. So who knows? Maybe he can salvage it a little bit. But I like what the Avs have done here, Nick. I don't know if you feel differently, but clearly looking at their goaltending early in the season, seeing the high-end talent that they have, what guys like MacKinnon, Rantanen, obviously Val Nichushkin now that he's back, Cale Makar, what these guys are capable of, but getting subpar goaltending and knowing we've got a legitimate contender on our hands here if we can fix that area. So we don't know if it's going to work out. These guys are no guarantees, but by all accounts, I think Blackwood would be an improvement, wouldn't you say, based on what they were getting early in the year?
Well, what's that classic kids book, Something Out of Nothing? I sort of feel that way with Colorado. With the due respect, they won a Stanley Cup with Darcy Kemper. Just give me adequate goaltending, and Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, and others will take it from there, including Mikko Rantanen. That's pretty much my feel. They had to do something. You talk about desperation. I think you can feel it in the last month for Colorado. They have been winning games, but it's tough to win games when your goalie routinely is letting four goals a game, and that's exactly what was happening with Georgiev. So in Blackwood, I think it's fair to say he's their 1A with Wedgwood right now. 6-9-3, 2.95, a 9-11 one shutout with one of the worst teams in hockey. Like, I just wonder how that translates over to Colorado, because defensively, I think, is the bigger issue for that team. I know they couldn't get a stop, but their system's a bit out of whack right now.
Yeah, and I think the goaltending was taking most of the blame for exactly what you just said, a lot of defensive issues early in the season. I will say it feels like they're tightening things up a little bit. They're getting better in that area, so hopefully creating a better environment for these two goaltenders. Do you think both have value in fantasy here moving forward, Nick? I think like Blackwood's the guy you obviously want to own out of the two. I think they're going to lean towards him, but it feels like it's not a guarantee who's going to get the starts here moving forward, and maybe Wedgwood could still bring some value.
That's exactly it. Not to say it's going to be a tandem. I think, obviously, as you mentioned, you give the upper hand to Blackwood, but it's not like he's going to play five in a row and Wedgwood's going to play one. I don't see it working that way. I think Colorado wants to figure out if this is going to last, if this is going to work through the balance of the season into the Stanley Cup playoffs, assuming they get there, of course. So that's probably the way I would play it. If I had to pick one of the two, obviously you go with Blackwood. But I still have questions. Like, I think they've rectified a couple of issues, but to sit here and suggest Colorado's now suddenly a cup contender because they got these two guys, I can't get to that level.
So you're not rushing to back the Avalanche Cup future now after these moves. I don't know. Like I love the high-end talent for this team, but like you said, there are still some issues, and they have proven that they can win with just average to above average goaltending. So I'm in, but am I opening up the sports book and betting money on the Avs to win the cup in that division? I just can't do it right now because you've got Minnesota there, you've got Winnipeg there. Maybe we can get into it a little bit with Leboff when he joins us a little bit later in the episode. But you've got some beasts in that central. They're certainly one of them, but I don't know if I'm fully sold on them being the best team in the central just yet.
Well, I said this earlier on in the season, the time to bet on a Colorado future to win the Stanley Cup was after they started the season like 0-5 or whatever it was. Like, that's the value you're going to find. So I did take that flyer, and that's why win or loss, I feel okay. I think the value is there now, not so much. But Pete, you look at this tandem. How much better do you think it is?
I think it's significantly better considering Georgiev had like a high danger save percentage in the 700s, and now you're acquiring Blackwood, who edge stats alert is 90th percentile in the league in high danger save percentage, and Wedgwood even better at 97th percentile. So that's what I'm looking at. Not just one upgrade in Wedgwood, who's playing well, winning three of his first four games, including a shutout, but also Blackwood, super high ceiling for both of these guys, even if it is a tandem.
I like that. Snatch them up immediately. Colorado is a juggernaut team. Even if they win game 7-5, it's going to happen. But certainly, I think you see an increased presence in between the pipes. And anybody, anytime you can own a Colorado goaltender, at the very least, you know you're going to get victories. As I said off the top, Jake, I don't know what it feels or it means for Alexander Georgiev, who's having a brutal contract year. But for me, this like reeks like Carolina. Like I can view somebody picking this guy up as a reclamation project. I think the duty now for San Jose is to try to find a suitor for Georgiev between now and the deadline. Do you agree?
I know you love your contract years, Nick, but they don't always work out, right? I know that's something we always target at the start of a fantasy season. Okay, who's playing for cash this year? And Georgiev was one of those guys this year. Okay, he's playing for cash. He should be motivated and doesn't always work out. Maybe the pressure gets to you a little bit. And obviously, he's lost his confidence, lost his way in this league. And now he ends up on one of the worst teams in the league in a rebuild. I like what you said about Carolina. I don't know if it's necessarily going to be Georgiev in particular, but I think that's a team that needs to get aggressive for a goaltender. Watching Colorado make these two moves, one of the first things I thought was, where's Carolina? Like, obviously, they don't have to make the move right now. And you know, they can feel comfortable that they're still going to be in a playoff spot and make that move later in the season. But I think at some point, Carolina's got to pounce here, whether it's a Georgiev, a John Gibson. I don't know. Go down the list of goaltenders that could be available. I feel like the Canes have to be next up in terms of the goaltending market.
It's always a game of musical chairs, and you're right. I own Pyotr Kochetkov, and it's always a roller coaster night. Maybe it's a system, and maybe it's the unfortunate nature of playing for Carolina, but you get like 16 shots on goal a night. You let three in. That's 13 saves. Your save percentage is in cahoots. Like, it's just not a good recipe for fantasy success in between the pipes, but you're so right on Carolina. I'm just curious. Like, it's you would think if Georgiev can play good enough, somebody is going to pick him up between now and the trade deadline. And that would be so ironic if he goes to like a legitimate, you know, bubble contender, you want to call them that, and he goes on a crazy run. That'd be the funniest thing ever to me.
It's so tricky from a fantasy perspective too, because what do you do with him? Do you want him on San Jose and firing up in those games? That feels very, very sketchy. Or do you, you know, hang on to him, stash him, and hope that he gets dealt and flipped like you just talked about? And that could be a risky move as well, because he might never get traded. And then, you know, you're just hanging on to an asset that's collecting dust on your bench. So it does feel like this move from a San Jose perspective is trying to clear a spot for Yaroslav Askarov to come up and really be the guy in San Jose, because that's why they went out and got him. So I think he gets the bump here in San Jose from a goaltending perspective.
Yeah, I would drop Georgiev. I'm sorry. I'm not waiting around for the deadline. We just talked about possible destinations. There really isn't one right now when we have this conversation for Georgiev. So I would just drop him. I'm not a believer in San Jose. I think they're going to play this run-and-gun style. It's very loose. It's very open. On top of that, Georgiev's just not a good goalie. I think we're at a point in time where maybe we overhyped this guy a bit coming over from the New York Rangers. Never really panned out with Colorado. The Askarov one is, you know, increasingly interesting, because entering the year, there was just this conversation around him. He wanted to play in the NHL, but I have no issue with seasoning a guy in the AHL, especially when you have a team like the San Jose Sharks. They're a bottom five team, I think we can both agree, in the league. I think there's going to be some growing pains. They're a young team, relatively speaking. I don't think there's a need to force feed this guy into the NHL, and that's why I think they'll be careful with the way they deploy him this season.
I don't think there's a need either, at least from how I would manage things. But from Askarov's opinion, it feels like he wants to play, right? That's why he's on San Jose and why he's no longer playing for the Nashville Predators. He was unhappy with his playing time there. He didn't want to play in the American Hockey League. He wanted to be a starter or at least a goaltender at the NHL level. So I think this is San Jose maybe making room for that and appeasing him. And it's a very small sample size that we've seen him in the NHL, Nick. But the numbers are very good. Again, take it with a grain of salt, 'cause it's only a handful of games. But if we get some signs that he's going to be the guy in San Jose, I know you talked about them being a bit run and gun, and they're going to give up their fair share of chances and goals, I would fire him up just because of the high-end ceiling that he could end up having if he does pan out this year.
Just a side note as well, really ages me thinking about his dad, Andrei Kovalenko, but Nikolai Kovalenko, the ad in this, 25 years of age, but started on the fourth line with Ty Dellandrea and Nico Sturm, far cry from being like a top six guy for the majority of the season with Colorado. So just put him on your watch list for now. Not going to say it's going to pan out, but I think there's a bit of value there sleeper-wise when it comes to Kovalenko with the San Jose Sharks. A bunch of guys back skating, namely on Long Island. Anthony Duclair has played all but five games this season for the Islanders, has missed 25 and counting now with a lower body injury. They could get him back soon. And Matthew Barzal, a full participant at practice on Thursday as well. So things on the upswing for the Islanders here, Jake.
Well, I try to avoid picking up New York Islanders in fantasy hockey, Nick, but the one that I would be interested in is obviously Matt Barzal. I mean, you can't pick him up. He's going to be sitting on someone's injured reserve out there, but he took a major step last year as a guy that was starting to shoot the puck a lot more and became a little bit of a different player, and he carried that into the early part of this season before he got injured. So that's going to give them a spark offensively, and honestly, they're hanging around in the playoff race. They just basically take every game to overtime, but they find ways to pick up points and hang around this thing, right? And the Rangers have opened up the door for some teams to come through. So, a couple wins here recently. Maybe this gives the Islanders an injection of life.
A nice tie-in here. Remember when the Islanders almost acquired JT Miller and it fell through?
Yes. It sounds like he's almost back or nearing return.
Well, that's it. So JT Miller hasn't played since November 17th, still with Vancouver, by the way, for personal reasons. I was going to ask you, like, you buying low, you selling 17 games, 16 points, entering the fantasy season, widely perceived as what, a top 20, top 15 fantasy target? By his standards, up and down start, clearly, but I actually think there's some value in the player right now.
Yeah, I think I have to buy and just trust in JT Miller and what he's been the last couple of seasons. And you know, his role on that Vancouver team. I mean, he's the heartbeat. He's the guy. That being said, they played okay without him, relatively well. They did a decent job treading water. But we don't know exactly what he's been going through. But if he feels like he's ready to come back and make this return, I have to think he's going to revert back to the old JT Miller. So is there some risk involved? Sure. But I'm in on JT Miller and excited to see him get back into that Canucks lineup.
Delivered by our good friends over at Skip, we get to the mailbag. Merzlikins, hold or drop? What would you do with Elvis Merzlikins in Columbus, Jake?
Ooh, that's tough. This one's so tricky, and this goes back to our conversation a couple weeks ago about goaltenders on bad teams or teams that you can't necessarily trust. There's going to be some starts for Merzlikins this year where he does well. I do trust him to have those big pop games, but he's also going to have those games where he gives up five or six goals and totally kills your goaltending category. So it comes down to league size for me. If you're in a deep league, I think Merzlikins has enough value to hang on to him as your third, maybe your fourth goaltender if you're rostering that many. But anything less than that, like a 10-team league, 12-team league, I think I'm probably cutting ties there.
Very well said. Although, as I've mentioned throughout the season, I do have a flyer on Columbus to make the Stanley Cup playoffs, a bet I laid before the season started. Now, Jake, on Tuesday, I was watching my television streaming a game. Couldn't believe it. I saw Thatcher Demko on the ice. So he actually officially returned. He was a backup to your boy Kevin Lankinen. Something weird's going on here in Vancouver. But Demko comes back, allows four goals on 25 and a 4-3 OT loss against the St. Louis Blues. So that's pleasant news, I guess.
Yeah, maybe not the best start coming back, but I don't think we have to expect him to come out and just get a shutout right out of the gates. Like, this guy's got to get his feet wet a little bit, get his legs underneath him, and he's coming off a long injury. I mean, this is not easy. So I think if you're a Demko owner, you're excited to see him back out there. He's not going to go back into workhorse role. Like you said, Lankinen's there, and he's played great this year. So there's no reason for Vancouver to start Demko every game. I think they're going to be very cautious with this thing, and eventually we're hopefully going to see him get back to playing that top-end hockey, but promising to see him back. I got a goaltending question for you here, Nick, as well. It actually relates to something I brought up a couple weeks ago. Is Montembeau a goaltender we can finally trust? I kind of shouted him out earlier. Feels like Montreal's playing a little bit better now. Nothing to write home about, but some improvements there. Can we fire up Montembeau, actually trust him the rest of the season?
Jake, trust is a big word in my life. I can't get there with the Montreal Canadiens and Samuel Montembeau. Having said that, I think they're a perfect sleeper candidate in the second half of the season. They do this all the time where it's like they're out of contention and maybe they go on this crazy run. Patrick Laine's back in the mix. He's scoring goals, which is great to see. They got Hudson. They got Caulfield. They got Suzuki. They got some weapons on that roster. But you want to talk about value in the second half of the season, sleeper teams that could upset some teams. I think Montreal is firmly involved in that conversation. To answer your question, I'm not dancing around it. I think he's a suitable guy to be like your third string guy Spot start him. I wouldn't start him every game, but there's a reason why he was selected for Team Canada for the Four Nations. He's having a really good year. He's been building the last couple of years. And hard to believe he was like a waiver pickup a couple of years ago, right?
He's a little bit boom or bust. Like, you could get that 40-save shutout, or you could get that game where he just rinses your goaltending categories for the entire week. So maybe pick your spots. But I think in terms of having a roster spot on your team, I'm okay with it. And I actually like where Montreal's trending here, especially with – I know Patrick Laine doesn't really help defensively, but it feels like it's given them another weapon, a little bit more confidence up front. And, you know, maybe this is a team that can have a decent second half. So I'm in. Another interesting question here for you, Nick. Who are players you could trade Steven Stamkos for right now? I saw this one on there. I don't know. Like, obviously, it's hard to narrow down a specific player, but what's the value, I think, is probably the better question here on Steven Stamkos. If you wanted him off your roster, do you think you could get anything back?
I should preface by saying this is the biggest mistake I made of the fantasy season, having faith and trusting and drafting Steven Stamkos, albeit it was in a keeper. There wasn't much available when I finally got. I didn't have a first or second round pick. I believe I got him in the third round. It just hasn't worked out. There's turmoil there. I think best case scenario, quite honestly, is if Stamkos gets traded, if he picks up and says, you know what, it's not a fit in Nashville. This team's not going to be a contender. Send me to Broadway or send me, you know, somewhere else. To answer your question, I don't know how much you're getting right now. He's hovering around 100 rank. You're not going to get what the proper value should be. I think you're just better off holding on Steven Stamkos, because I've been wondering the same thing. Unless you want to, you know, sell a low on a guy. Like, if you just want him off your roster, by all means. But the guy's so good, I would just hold on him at this point.
The fantasy community is begging for a Nashville fire sale right now. Get these guys out of there. Get them on a better team. That's how we all feel right now.
Oh, no doubt about that. I was going to get your thoughts as well on the Anaheim Ducks. Leo Carlson and Pavel Minchikov back, and they're proudly punted 5-1 by your Ottawa Senators. They are your Ottawa. This podcast is Ottawa Senators. My goodness, that team is so up and down. But hey, Brady Tkachuk's not going anywhere, in case you missed that. But I just need more consistency in general from this Ducks team. I know we've talked about Carlson and Minchikov quite a bit the last couple of years, but I don't view these guys as more than streamer options right now.
Yeah, speaking of up and down, I mean, more downs with Anaheim, but similar to Ottawa in that standpoint. And those are the kind of games, if you're Ottawa and you want to try to make any sort of run at a playoff spot, you absolutely have to win those home games against teams like Anaheim. I think Leo Carlson, to me, I have some interest in him moving forward, Nick. I just think he's a really talented player. If we're looking at guys that can really help Anaheim take that next step, he's probably the guy up front that I look at and say, yeah, he's that already well-rounded player as a young guy, and I think he's going to continue to grow. So I like Carlson. Mitnikov, I'm not so sure about. I like him. I think he's talented, but with Zellweger back there as well, it seems a little busy on the back end. I don't know exactly how those power play units are going to shake up. And even if he's first power play, I don't know how good that first power play is going to be. So I way more interest in Carlson than Mitnikov for me.
You talked about Nashville, the captain, Roman Josi, lower body injury. So he's banged up, just adding to the list of issues with that team so far this season. If Josi's forced to miss time, I would pick up Brady Shea. Externally adds Aaron Ekblad. Lane Hudson's been hot with Montreal. Damon Severson and Anthony Cirelli is day-to-day with Tampa upper body injury. Nick Paul is the guy who's been promoted up the lineup. Externally, I would look at the red-hot Dylan Holloway with St. Louis, Shane Wright with Seattle, and Jonathan Huberdeau has been pretty hot here with the Calgary Flames.
Guys, just wanted to chime in on some defensive replacements. Look at Colorado now that they're fully healthy. The 5-on-5 game, which is already top 5 in the league in shot attempts percentage, is going to improve. So external replacements for Josi or Rasmus Dahlin. Look at Devon Taves, buy low, appeal. He plays with Cale Makar. I can't believe he hasn't scored more points than he has to this point. I think it'll turn around to some extent for him. Also, Sam Girard's up to 16 points and has renewed appeal, I think, for the Avalanche blue line.
And Pete, piggybacking off that, delivered by our good friends over at Skip, our fan question suggests, any interest in buying low on Devon Taves or picking up Sam Girard now that they're getting healthy? You just sort of brought up the point here. I'll go first, Jake. A guy like Taves, I haven't been crazy about in fantasy hockey. I know the numbers have been there at times over the last couple of years, but he's not a guy I view as like a perennial stud in the back end. Like, I think he's probably in the secondary market, if you ask me. And Girard's a guy who's never really lived up to expectations, so I'd probably say no on both fronts.
I think Girard, from a talent perspective, if he was on a different team where he was getting PP one time, I would be very interested in fantasy hockey because I think he prototypes as somebody that could have a lot of success there. But there's this guy called Cale Makar on Colorado. He's pretty good, and he gets that time, and I don't think there's really a spot for him. So I think this would be a very deep league play on Girard, like 16-team league. Okay, you need a little help on the back end. Maybe Colorado's got a good week, and I'm with you on Taves. He's a great defenseman. He just never really translates well over to the fantasy hockey game.
Delivered by Skip. Sell high on Scheifele. Would you do that right now? Ooh. The Winnipeg Jets have been a juggernaut the majority of the season.
I actually think I would be interested. Like, I'm not rushing to trade him off my roster, but if someone's willing to give me a decent piece back for Mark Scheifele, I will do it, because if you go look at his file, he's consistent every year, usually right around or below a point per game. Really solid. You know what you're going to get. And he's taken it to another level this year. So have the Winnipeg Jets. So history says he can't really keep up this kind of pace. And if that's the case and someone's willing to offer me, you know, somebody that regularly gets over a point per game or is in that range, I'd have some interest in making that move.
Yeah, on top of that, I think he plays that taxing game where I just don't know if this point production is you know, something he can be capable of all season long. I think if you can get pretty decent value, like off the top of my head, if would you even contemplate like a Stamkos for a Scheifele? Is that fair value? Or
I think I would prefer the Scheifele side of that deal, to be honest. I think Stamkos and that Preds team is lost. Like you said, I mean, if a move was made that got him to a different spot, then yeah, I would maybe have a little bit more interest in him. I think I'd be looking for a little bit better than Stamkos just because of the production that Scheifele's putting up right now. I would try to get as much value as I could back.
All right, let's shift now to some betting talk with our guy, Michael Leboff. What's going on, Leboff? How are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty excited. How are you guys?
Not bad. We're breaking down some of the terrible teams, some of the good teams. I think naturally a place to start with you, bud, would be the Nashville Predators, who have been a tire fire. Maybe some expected this, maybe some did not. But how would you play this team moving forward in the betting market?
Yeah, we've probably hit rock bottom on Nashville, I would say. So I'm going to try my best. Excuse me. I'm going to try my best to find a spot to buy low. But there's sometimes you just got to draw a line through a team for a little while, and I feel like that's where we're at with Nashville, because they're searching for answers. I don't necessarily want to buy in on a team that is in that stage of the of the muck. Like, I'd much rather buy on a team like even like San Jose or Chicago. At least you know you're going to get like an honest effort out of them. I just don't think anything's clicking for the Predators right now, and those guys all have that 1,000-yard stare on the bench, like waiting for the shoe to drop, because they're all waiting for what's the next move. Is, you know, the coach, is it going to be a player? Something's going to shake up there, and you feel like that team is like on the ice waiting for it to come. And until that does happen, you do wonder if they're even going to be able to get their act a little bit together. So I would much rather be on the side of buying on them when they're this low in the market. But even them, it's a little tough with this team right now.
What about another team that has just looked completely lost over the last few weeks, Leboff, in the New York Rangers? They did get the win Wednesday in Buffalo, but a lot of teams go into Buffalo and get wins, so I don't know how much we're reading into that one. Is this a good team that was just playing really bad for a few weeks stretch, and we can back them and find some value moving forward? Or is there legitimate problems in New York and you're trying to stay away from this thing?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to buy on them yet either. There's something to be said, and I think a lot of times as fantasy players and bettors, we tend to try to drown out as much of the extracurricular noise as possible. But in a sport like hockey, where effort really matters and getting everyone to pull the rope in the same direction really matters, when the general manager is putting out memos, putting guys on the trading block publicly, and this isn't just in the season, right? Like the Barclay Goodrow thing happened, Trouba in the summer, then Trouba now, Kreider, etc. Kaapo Kakko's name's been out there. I mean, the team looks distracted when they're playing, and even that game against Buffalo, I don't know how much credit the Rangers deserve in that win. The Sabres were the better team for one period and were able to hang around. There were still some defensive breakdowns, a couple posts. And we know, Jake, like the Rangers are always going to be a little bit overvalued in the betting market, because of what they did last year, their presence in the market and their expectations they had coming in. So I think the betting, the bookmakers are going to want to be ahead of any turnaround. So you're still going to be looking at a team that you're getting, you're going to have to pay a premium for. And I don't know if I trust them yet. We know that they can rhyme off a bunch of wins in a row just on talent alone. But I even if they do that, I wouldn't be like rushing to bet into like, oh, they're back now kind of stuff.
The Los Angeles Kings have won six in a row. It's been really quiet. Nobody's really talking about it. Is it because they do this every year where they go on these peaks and valleys?
Yeah, and I think it's also like the method of how they get their success, right? They just show up. They come at you in waves. They beat you at the five-on-five game. They get one more save than you. They get one more goal than you. And then they move on to the next game. And, yeah, there's very little flash to it at all, right? It's not Nathan MacKinnon trading chances with the team and winning 7-6. It's come into UBS Arena, win a pretty sleepy 3-1 professional win, and move on now to New Jersey. And I think there's some value on Los Angeles tonight in New Jersey. That 5-on-5 game they play is legit. They're getting the goaltending. The blue line, even without Doughty, is really tough to penetrate. And I do think there's even some room for improvement from this team. So Los Angeles is, they're basically in the same spot they were last year around this time, which, you know, sounds bad because this is right before they went on that, you know, that tanker, but which is they're being a little underrated in game to game and the futures market, and not a team I would hate to have a piece of.
Well, yeah, speaking of the futures market, I wanted to get into that with you a little bit here, Leboff. And look, the Kings do this to me every year. They wrote me in. This is a smaller stretch. Usually they do it for like a full month, and they play this excellent brand of hockey, and I'm like, who's beating this team in the playoffs? Well, it's Edmonton. We know Edmonton will beat them in the playoffs. That's just what happens. So I feel like by the end of this thing, I'll probably have a Kings future on my sports book at some point. But is there any numbers that jump out to you right now? Like, I saw a 35-1 hanging around on the Washington Capitals earlier this week on a couple sports books, and I thought, man, that's a big number for a team that's proving they're in that mix as a top team in the Metropolitan Division. So it doesn't have to be Washington, but is there any teams that are jumping out to you there?
Yeah, Washington for sure. 35-1 Los Angeles is right there at 30s as well. And I do think that in hockey, more than any other sport, like it takes a long time for numbers to get to a place where they settle, because everyone comes in with their priors and thinks, all right, the five best teams in this league are the Panthers, the Oilers, the Avalanche, etc. And you have to prove it to me that you belong in that conversation before we even consider putting you up there. And it usually takes like three seasons, it feels like, for teams to do that. And there's nothing that I've seen that doesn't tell me that Los Angeles and Washington and a few other teams like hanging around in that area should be. You know, a couple scrolls away from a team like Edmonton or Colorado. I don't think Washington or LA should be the Stanley Cup favorite, but you know, they should be in that, you know, 6-8 range. They should certainly be. And I know a lot of this has to do with money that's come in on teams before the season, et cetera, but they should be right around there in that like 12-15-1 range with the Devils, the Avalanche, the Leafs. They should certainly be shorter than the Rangers right now. It's a little peculiar, especially because the bookmakers were quick to move on a team like Minnesota, and not as much on Washington and Los Angeles, who, you know, the record might not be as good, but it is still pretty stellar.
Leboff, are you open to taking a flyer on Anthony Stolarz for the Vezina Trophy? Like, I think Connor Hellebuck is the runaway favorite right now, but Stolarz 9-5-2, 2.13, and 9.28 one shutout so far.
Yeah, the Vezina is like, there's really... it's hard to find too much value in the awards market. The Vezina is probably the only one that has anything that's stand out to me. Stolarz is a name that jumped out. I think you can still make a case for a couple other guys in that range as well. Like, I mean, Sorokin at 75-1, if he can continue to go on the run that he's on right now, I think at 75-1 makes sense. Because right now, right, like you said, it's Hellebuck is odds on at -120. Then it's Philip Gustafson right behind him on the other side of the even money mark, right? He's +140. I don't think it's really a 2-horse race. I think this is more like a 15-horse race with Hellebuck as the pace setter. I think there's a lot of guys who can get hot and catch him. You know, even Linus Ullmark to me, right? Like, and I think that goes into what I think about Ottawa. I still think there's plenty of value on Ottawa in futures markets, even, you know, 20-25-1 to win the division. Like, this team should be able, if they get the goaltending, to go on a run at some point. And whether they do or not, who knows, but you look at the stats, right? They're something like 30 or 48-2 when they get 900 goaltending or better in like the last three seasons or something like that. I saw that stat after Ullmark had that game against the Ducks. So if they can get the goaltending, this team should be able to get real, like, white hot and make a charge. We just haven't seen it, and I know it's famous last words, but Ullmark, Sorokin, Stolarz, I think there's still a handful of goalies from way down in the pack that can make a race out of this Vezina hunt.
Excellent stuff, bud. Thanks so much for your time today.
You got it, guys.
The one and only Michael Leboff. Jake, let's get to some bets here. A 14-game slate on Thursday. A couple things I'm looking at. I'm actually going to fade Leboff. I like the Devils in regulation. I thought they were really good against the Maple Leafs on Tuesday. Deserved a better fate. LA's got to lose eventually, so give me the LA Kings to lose that game in regulation against New Jersey. And I like the Maple Leafs puck line against the Anaheim Ducks.
I'll break the tie between you and Leboff and roll with you on that one. I actually do like New Jersey, too. I like the way that they played that game. I mean, you run that game against the Leafs back 100 times. They're probably winning it like 98-99 times. So I like the Capitals on the puck line in Columbus. I still don't think they're getting quite enough respect. I do like what the Jackets have done this year, but I'm going to roll with the Caps. And give me the Habs as a very slight home dog against the Pittsburgh Penguins. I know the Penguins have been playing a little better of late, but I kind of like the way the Habs are playing. Montembeau between the pipes, and it worked so good on Monday's show. Nick, why can't we fire up the Patrick Laine goal once again?
I'm into it. Just a couple more things here. Saturday slate, Vegas at Edmonton. I like the under 6.5. You talk about Laine, it's Montreal at Winnipeg Saturday night. Patrick Laine anytime goal. 3 goals in 3 games against the Winnipeg Jets in his career. What are you looking at, Pete?
So I got Dylan Holloway for a goal and or shots on goal on Thursday against the Sharks. The Blues have played well against them this season. Brian Rust up top with Crosby at Montreal. Could see there being a lot of goals in that game on both sides. And then shout out to Tom Wilson. The guy had a small fracture of the sinus cavity area bone. Came back, scored 2 goals the other day. He's good to go for Thursday against Columbus. He's up to 11 goals. He's going to set a career high if he stays healthy this year. So Tom Wilson for a goal or a point at Columbus. I like that play.
He had like the Quagmire face going in that game too. That was just ridiculous. Hockey players, they're built differently. There's no doubt about that. NHL Unscripted with Adnan Virk and former NHLer Jason Demers is the talk of the town in the NHL world right now. This new podcast is part of the new NHL and iHeart collaboration. Episode 2 is live now, and it features an interview with Donnie Granato breaking down the NHL coaching carousel as well as the ever-churning hot seat. NHL Unscripted is available on the iHeart app, wherever you get your podcast. Jake, I'm looking forward to Monday, Week 11, Waiver Wire edition, my friend.
Can't wait until we can chat again. Love Petey's shout-out on Dylan Holloway. I'm on that shot prop Thursday night. And give me McKinnon for shots as well. That number's a little too low for my liking. So we'll have plenty to talk about on Monday, Nick. Always
getting
fun.
Soggy with it here on NHL Fantasy on Ice. I love it. Thank you to producer Phil Constantino, for Pete Jensen, Michael Leboff, and Jay Kahn. I'm Nick Alberga. You've been listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice, delivered by Skip. Skip to the good part and get groceries, meals, and essentials delivered right to your door on Skip.